Hello, everyone. My name is Elijah David, Minister of 12th Hour Apostolic Sabbatarian Congregation, Mount Zion at the 12th Hour, in the Elgin, Texas. Today is September the 23rd, 2024, or it is the 21st day of Tishri, 28. We're going to start our second service now on this day with a continuation of The Man on the White Horse by Ben Roden. This is part number 3. And the name of our sermon is The Truth Established by the Type, Symbols, and Antitype. Okay, we're going to go into part 3, Man on the White Horse, Ben Roden, compilation by him. It says, The Truth Established by the Type, Symbols, and Antitype. It says, For the whole system of the types and symbols was a compacted prophecy of the preaching of the plan of the salvation of the everlasting covenant of the Yahshua. Faith in His blood, that's the gospel, was Yahweh spelled it out in the law of Moses. But the word gospel, two words, old English translation, telling us that Yahweh spelled out the plan of salvation of the blood of the everlasting covenant with the law of Moses. So it says, the whole system of types and symbols was a compacted prophecy of the gospel, the teaching of the plan of the salvation of the blood of the everlasting covenant. And that's, find out that at everlasting covenant in Exodus, I believe it's 24:8. So it says, a presentation in which were bound up the promises of the redemption. Acts the Apostles, page 14. Thus, through the patriarchs and prophets, as well as through types and symbols, Yahweh spoke to the world concerning the coming of a deliverer from sin. Prophets and Kings, page 697. Thus, through the types and symbols, He makes wise the simple and confounds the prudent by showing that where there is no type, there is no truth. 2 Shepherd's Rod, page 10, paragraph 2. That's in volume 2 of the Shepherd's Rod. Again, we see there is a type for every event. And let none despise types, for where there is no type, there is no truth. 2 Shepherd's Rod, page 153. For close study of the type is the only possible way to clear the truth. 2 Shepherd's Rod, 266, paragraph 5. For the ancient Babylon became a type, and had it not been so, there would have been no modern Babylon. The Antitype, Revelation 18, 2. 2 Shepherd's Rod, page 268, 3. See also Revelation 14, 8. Okay, see. Now, if never before, we should see that where there is a type, there is also an antitype, that where there is no type, there is no truth. That's taken from 1 Kings 47:15-1. When we consider the leadership of the Yahweh's people, Israel, anciently, and make application to the Yahweh's leadership of the modern day Israel, SDA, we see that since the Philistines of old slew Jonathan, Saul's son, First Samuel 31:2-6, then we are made conscious of the fact that to be true to the type, the antithetical Christians must slay Jonathan, the SDA executive council, before they slay Saul, SDA general conference. With the enmity exerted by the evil influence, it can well be seen that there is an attempt to persuade the antitypical David to use the advantage that the Yahweh gives him to slay Saul. 1 Samuel 24:4, first part. However, like David of old, the David of today only cuts off the skirt of Saul's robe, while the angel of the seventh heaven, Laodicea, that would be the a prophet in charge of the Advent Church, that would be Willis Johnson, in charge of the third feeding pastor, Gilead Center in Conner, Texas, 2002, he used his own righteousness with which to cover his feet, 2 Samuel 24:4. Last part, in his letter sin sleeping condition, see Revelation 3:13-19. Ishbosheth, Saul's son, a type, that's our next subtitle, for it was thought by many in Israel that since Ishbosheth was Saul's son, he should be the rightful heir unto his father's throne. Read 2 Samuel 2. There were two brothers, Bana and Rechab, captains of bands, who slew Ishbosheth. Later David had his young men slay them, 2 Samuel 4:12. But they took the head of Ishbosheth and buried it. In this act, David of old showed his loyalty to the king of Israel and his respect for the Saul by avenging the blood of his son. There is a nobility of the character shown in the right action, and the son of Jesse, although faulty, did show forth a dignity and certain qualities of the moral excellence in his regard for the king's office. Revival and Reformation is our next subtitle. During World War I, the General Conference failed to take a stand for the conscientious objection, the non-combatant service and Sabbath privileges, with a diet free from the unclean meats for the Seventh-day Adventist boys in Germany. They committed and even encouraged the SDA young men to take up arms and fight. Well, that's your Jesuit influence in the Adventist Church in 1917, during the start of World War I. For the proof that the spirit of persecution was manifested by our former brethren, now please notice the following document which appeared in the Dresden direction, North Richton, April 12, 1918. Advent ministers and the fatherland. At the beginning of the war, our denomination, Sylvia, divided into two parts, while 98% of our membership took the position on the Bible ground that it was their conscientious duty to defend the fatherland with weapons, and that also on the Sabbath, and this united position of the leaders was at once forwarded to the War Department. 2%, however, did not submit themselves to this united resolution, and therefore had to be disfellowshipped because of their unchristian conduct. These unprofitable elements set themselves up as preachers and with small results made propaganda for their foolish ideas. They call themselves false preachers and Adventists. They are not. They are deceivers. When such elements shall receive their merited punishment, we regard it in fact a favor done toward us, for our leaders have up to this day invested our surplus church money in war loans and the fullest assurance that Germany, with the Yahweh's help, would come through the struggle victorious. Everywhere, our members are sharing the self-evident duty and getting into the hands of the fatherland the so much needed men. The Adventist men are practically all in the field or army service, faithfully performing their duty and expect a just treatment as thanks from the fatherland also. For the truth about the reform movement in the Seventh-day Adventist Church, Patriarchs and Prophets, page 10 and 11, or pages 10 and 11, wherever that book is from, please note the above statement from the official German SDA publication as quoted in the truth about the reform movement in the Seventh-day Adventist Church. It says 98% took the stand that it was their duty to defend the fatherland, Germany, with arms. Their refusal to take up arms and defend Germany, even on Yahweh's holy Sabbath day, was considered unchristian by all but 2% of the church membership, because the 2% stood firm for the principle. They were disfellowshipped if those who stood firm for their faith were killed. It was regarded by the rebellious majority as a service unto them. All leaders have invested church money, the tithe, etc., and war loans to arm Adventist young men in Germany to fight, disregarding even the Sabbath, and to kill Seventh-day Adventist boys from France, England, America, etc. What greater deception can come upon the human mind than for men to think they have an exalted position before Yahweh, when in fact they incur His divine wrath by their wicked actions? I was shown that the Yahweh's people who are his peculiar treasure, cannot engage in this perplexing war, for it is opposed unto every principle of their faith. In the army they cannot obey the truth and at the same time obey the requirements of their officers. There would be a continual violation of the conscience. Worldly men are governed by worldly principles. They can appreciate no other. Testimony, Volume 1, page 361, by Ellen G. White. It says, as a result of the wrong course taken by the representatives of the General Conference of the SDA in Germany, the reform movement Ishbosheth, an offspring of the Mother Church, was born. Saul and his posterity ruled in Israel for only 40 years, a season after David was anointed by Samuel to become king of Israel. Oh, I see. Let's read that again. Saul and his posterity ruled in Israel for only a season, a short time, after David was anointed by the Samuel to become king of Israel. For as soon after that David was anointed by the Yahweh's prophet as Samuel, the Philistines slew Jonathan, and Saul and two brothers arose in one combined effort and slew Ishbosheth as he lay on a bed at noon. 2 Samuel 4:5. Captains of bands, in making a right application of the type and antitype, remember it must be done in a correct manner in order to teach a present truth lesson. Unmasking error, making wise the simple, and confounding the so-called wise, we must realize that there is a key revealed by the inspiration with which to unlock the mysteries of heaven. Through the spirit of the prophecy by Ellen G. White, inspiration revealed the key with which we are able to unlock the mystery of the identity of the true Israel of today. For the Yahweh remnant, which keep the commandments of the Yahweh and have the testimony of the Yahshua, Revelation 12:17. Okay, speaking of the ancient Israel, Sister White states, we are repeating the history of that people. Testimonies 5:160. Since we are repeating the history of the Israel, it must be that our history compares with theirs. Thus, inspiration's key unlocks the mystery and identifies the true remnant of the Israel. Therefore, as a result of the combined efforts of the two brothers in the type, Dana and Rechab, captains of band, who slew Ishbosheth, the son of Saul, at noon, we now have two brothers in the antitype, who in the one combined reform movement are zealously attempting to bring about a reform in the church. They figuratively slay the reform SDA church and a typical Ishbosheth while he is resting at noonday, while the light is shining from heaven. Here we see one coming up and the other going down. However, the antitypical David commands his young men, helpers, to slay the two brothers a non-prophetic reform movement with a sword of inspiration presentry. If the truth cannot save, it destroys. At this late hour, the reform that has the living testimony of the spirit of the prophecy consumes all non-inspired reform movements. It has been shown that the Yahweh is reviving the living pointed testimony that will develop character and purify the church. Volume 1 of Testimonies, page 216. I was shown that the point of testimony must live in the church. This alone will answer to the message, to the letter sin. That's Testimony, Volume 3, page 260. Yahweh designs that there shall ever be a living testimony in the church. Volume 3, Testimony, page 360. For this enmity, or for this unity, cannot be accomplished without a clear-pointed living testimony in the church. ID 361. Many years ago, Ellen G. White wrote, I saw angels hurrying to and fro in the heaven, descending to the earth, and again ascending to heaven, preparing for the fulfillment of some important event. Then I saw another mighty angel commissioned to defend sin to the earth to unite his voice with the third angel and give power and force unto his message. Early Writings 277. Here is sin. That the mighty angel, message of Revelation 18:1, which is the Yahshua, the branch, the Yahshua, our righteousness, Jeremiah 23:5, and 6, our Yahshua rebukes Satan and stands before Joshua, removing his iniquity and the sins of his people, Israel. Sister White said, then the angel who is the Yahshua himself, the Savior of sinners, puts to silence the accuser of his people, declaring, for the Yahshua rebuked thee, O Satan, even the Yahshua that has chosen Yahushua rebuked thee. Is not this a brand plucked out of the fire? Okay, 5T 469. When we realize that Joshua, the son of Josedech, of Zechariah 3, that's who is being talked about here, we realize that the Joshua. Well, no, that would be the Joshua of the son of Nun, escaped from the captivity in Babylon a few hundred years before the Yahshua. We are made aware of the fact that the preceding statements by the Yahshua's servants show that this symbolism in the Zechariah 3 refers to the antitypical Joshua in our day. So that would be Zechariah 3, it's Joshua the son of Josedech, that was made a priest. She speaks metaphorically of Judah returning from Babylon of old in comparison with the Yahshua's remnant, 144,000, returning to their homeland from the spiritual Babylon today to stand with the Lamb on the Mount of Zion, Revelation 14:1. For our Savior who has chosen New Jerusalem, the capital city of his kingdom, rebukes Satan, that while the followers of the Yahshua have sinned, they have not given themselves up to the control of evil. They have put away their sins and have sought the Yahweh and humility and contrition, and the divine advocate pleads in their behalf. So they have sought the Yahshua, the Son of Yahweh, in the humility and contrition, and the divine advocate pleads in their behalf. Yahshua, the Son of Yahweh, is the divine advocate. For the assaults of Satan are strong. His delusions are terrible. But the Yahweh's eye is upon his people. Their affliction is great. The flames of the furnace seem about to consume them, but the Yahshua will bring them forth as gold tried in the fire. Their earthliness must be removed, that the image of the Yahshua may be reflected. Unbelief must be overcome. Faith and the blood, hope and patience are to be developed. Page 474 ID. For the remnant are not only pardoned and accepted, but honored, a fair matter to sit upon their heads. They are to be as kings and priests unto the Yahweh. That's Testimony, Volume 5, page 475. Okay. Speaking of the leader of the Yahweh's remnant, Joshua, who has the living spirit of the prophecy, Mrs. White states, he would be honored as a judge or ruler over the temple and all his services. He should walk among attending angels even in this life, and should at last join the glorified throng around the throne of the Yahweh, 5T 469. Here we see that not only Joshua, as the General Conference or Executive Council President, has a crown during the loud cry, but all his helpers will have crowns also. Consequently, since D.T. Hollis says that the branch of Yahweh brings a revival and reformation, a great change, and he crowned Joshua as his underleader, and a church that goes by the new name of the Yahshua, the branch, goes up unto the antipodal David, Jeremiah 33:15-16, and Jeremiah 23:5. The truth stands out that the brother Hollis, with the oil of the truth and the shepherd rod, is the antitypical Samuel who anoints antitypical David to be the king of Israel. Okay. In the place of the antitypical Saul, the General Conference and his posterity. Okay. Truth is established by a true application of the types. Never forget that there is a type for every event. And let none despise types, for where there is no type, there is no truth. 2 Shepherds Rod 153 also. That where there is a type, there is also an antitype, and that where there is no type, there is no truth. 1 TG 47:15. For the facts speak for themselves. Their inspiration reveals the truth, and the weight of the evidence proves it correct. For example, Ellen G. White said that William Miller was a type of John the Baptist, early writings, 233. Yet the world and the church as a whole rejected William Miller and called his messages of the first and second angels of Revelation 14:68. False. Only a very few of the approximately 50,000 who followed Miller accepted E.G. White with the third angel's message of Revelation 14:9-13. Only a small percent of the 1.5 million or so of the SDA have progressed with the truth of the kingdom. Messages by the angel ascending from the east, Revelation 7:2, which incidentally is the fourth angel's message of the Revelation 14:15 that was brought by the Vichy Holler. Then the shepherd rod, Micah 6:9, he not only proclaimed the sealing of the 144,000, Revelation 7:1-8, but also announced the harvest angel, the fifth angel of Revelation 14:16-18, the branch with the seal of the Yahshua, a new name, Revelation 3:12, early writing 15. Likewise, it was only a remnant of those who had followed on with the fourth angel's message that continued to follow the truth in the fifth or harvest angel, the branch, and he came. Never has the leadership accepted a reform message from the Yahweh except in the case of Nineveh. However, the scriptures indicate the possibility of this preceding term being broken. If Miller was a false prophet, then E.G. White, Richie Hollis, and the branch messenger are likewise false prophets. But the branch messenger is Elijah David. Not only that, but John the Revelator would be false also, because of Patmos, he proclaimed that these messages would come. Therefore, since John proclaimed the five angels' messages of Revelation 14, which later were revealed successfully unto Yahweh's church through his messengers, Miller, White, Hollis, and the branch messenger, which is Elijah David, and as the founders of the SDA denomination saw that there are five messages in this chapter, WLF 10:11, and since inspiration has now linked these messages together, link after link, into an all unbreakable chain of the prophecy, Education, page 178, by L.G. White, they must be true. Satan works constantly and uses every force possible to keep Yahweh's people from advancing with the truth. Consequently, it is difficult to teach a new message to the church or the world. Nevertheless, John declared that the 144,000 from the church, Revelation 7:1-8, and a great multitude from all nations, Revelation 7:9, will receive the seal of these messages. The messages of number one, the seal of Yahweh, Great Controversy 4:52. Number two, New Yerushalayim, Revelation 3:12. And number three, Yahshua's new name, early writings 15, by the branch have been touching on quite readily in the SDA Church Israel and are picking up momentum. They will continue to grow in the church till the 144,000 are sealed, and they will go like wildfire to the world in the last trial. we had the non-profit prophetic messages in 1500 A.D. and onward by the Luther, Knox, Wesley, Calvin, and Campbell. Okay. Etc. Then the prophetic reform messages by Miller, White, the Shepherd's Rod, and now the branch followed in succession. As a result of these movements and messages, we have the denominations of today, a fact which conclusively shows that now all Israel is willing to progress with the light as the Yahweh chooses to send it. Reform messages are vitally necessary for the church in her backslidden condition when they are properly conducted and are free of the fanaticism. The Yahweh has always used prophets to guide straying Israel back to Him. Never has Israel as a whole given heed unto the Yahweh as He spoke to them through His prophet. It is only a remnant that has ever progressed with the truth. Therefore, if tares in the church will be bundled, but the wheat, the remnant, Revelation 12:17, will be put in the barn, the kingdom, Matthew 13:30. Let us ever keep in mind that we are drawing a parallel between the leadership of the ancient Israel and modern Israel, the Seventh-day Adventists, and the principal reform movements within her ranks. For the Davidians believed that the Vitiharis had the prophetic voice, and if the leaders of the SDA Church do not think so, that fact alone does not make him false. For the history of the Israel shows that she has never accepted the prophets Yahweh has sent. For the Jews did not accept Yahshua as the Messiah when he came. For the weight of the evidence from the Bible proves that the shepherd's rod message to be true. Are you catching on, brothers and sisters? Do you understand? For the young people seem to be the ones who are able to grasp the message by the branch more quickly than the older members of the church, Sister White, and the young people. Would finish the work. They are able to count the five angels' messages in the Revelation 14, as were the founders of the SDA Church, who stated all classes of Second Advent believers agree that the angel brought to you in the 6th and 7th verses of this chapter, Revelation 14, represents the Advent message to the church and the world. If this is true, then all five of the angels brought to you, and this chapter represents five distinct messages prior unto the advent, in other words, prior unto the coming of the second Yeshua advent, we are left without a rule to interpret this chapter. She wrote that in a word little flock, 1847, page 10 and 11. Published by Review and Herald Publishing Association, Washington, D.C. Older members have difficulty counting more than three angels in Revelation 14, and the Davidians, Shepherd God, more than four. Since their disappointment, some Davidians can only count three, while there are yet other Davidians who cannot count at all, since they were blinded by their leaders in 1959. For those who wish to learn about the fifth angel of Revelation 14, consider what Brother V.T. Hollis has to say regarding why David a tyrant. Now, Ben Roden, he's on track here, but Ben Roden's going to try to tell you that V.T. Hollis pointed him out as the, having the fifth angel. But that's not so. Because it's David is who we are today. We're that fifth group of laborers that is called the 11th hour, 2002, Matthew 20, verse 6. Okay. Inevitably, because he is the only one who perfectly fits the Antichrist. The leadership in the time of the loud cry of the third angel's message. This being so, then it necessarily follows that Saul, as the first king who reigned over Israel and who was largely responsible for the early experience of the David's life, is a type of the church leadership in the period preceding the loud cry, the leadership which was raised up in 1844 and for the sole purpose of gathering the 144,000, the first fruits of the kingdom. In each case, type perfectly matches antitype. On account of his outwardly kingly appearance, Saul was chosen by the people, as the reader will remember, to be their king, in the spite of the Yahweh's disapproval, 1 Samuel 8:7. Then finally, when the Yahweh rejected him and anointed David to be a king in his stead, he was determined to retain the throne by the attempting to kill David, but ended up ever before David ascended it by the deliberately killing himself, 1 Samuel 31:4. Time has already demonstrated that the SGA organization is fulfilling the task, preferring to incorporate and to elect officers by the people's vote. They have thereby manifested that they have cared not so much to please Yahweh by being a peculiar people as he would have them to be, as they have to please themselves by being as much as possible like the other denominations. Just as in the Saul's time, the people wanted to be like the nations round about them, 1 Samuel 8:5-7. And although chosen by the people, yet the general compass officers were nevertheless accepted by the Yahweh to be the rulers over his people now, as the Saul was anciently. Just as he betrayed his trust, however, by disobeying the word of Yahweh as spoken to him by the prophet Samuel, so the present church organization and the ancient men before the house have, says the prophet, of the church today betrayed their trust. Testimony right at 5, page 211, tract 8, 47-49. For the Saul consulted the familiar spirits of 1 Samuel 28:7-25, reporting on the full Gospel Businessmen's Fellowship International 10th Annual Convention in Seattle, July 1962. The FGB's magazine, Voice, September 1962, states that the Holy Spirit came down upon the people spoke in the towns. Many faiths assembled, Presbyterian, Methodist, Baptist, Seventh-day Adventist, all meeting at the feet of Yahshua, pages 3 and 5. Dr. H.M.S. Richards was the featured speaker, page 6. On the opening day, the September 1956 issue of Eternity Magazine, heard the following statement by Dr. Donald Barnhart concerning his meeting with the SDA leaders. but they do not believe as some of their earlier teachers taught, that the Yahshua's atoning work was not completed on Calvary, but instead that it will still turn on a second ministering work since 1844. This idea is also totally repudiated. Speaking to the SDA leadership, the servant of the Yahweh said, "You have no right to manage unless you manage under Yahweh's order. Are you under the control of the Yahweh? Do you see your responsibility to Him that these men should stand in the sacred place to be as a voice of Yahweh to the people, as we once believed the General Conference to be? That is past. What we want now is reorganization." General Conference Bulletin, the 34th Session, Volume 4, Extra Number 1, April the 3rd, 1901, page 25. It said, Ezekiel 37, you recall, prophetically proclaimed that David is to rule at a time when the two sticks, houses of Israel, are joined together in the land Yahweh gave unto Jacob. This prophecy has not as yet been fulfilled, for the 12 tribes has never returned since the Ezekiel's time. Only a remnant of the Jews returned from Babylon and were in the land when the Messiah was anointed in 27 A.D., 69 weeks, 483 years, Daniel 9:25, from the time the decree was issued by the Artaxerxes for the Jews to return from their captivity in Babylon to Jerusalem and Palestine, Ezra 7:13. At that time, the kingdom of Yahweh was to have been set up, redissolved, ages 577. Even though our forefathers rejected the Yahweh and thereby thwarted His plan to give them the kingdom in their day, that which the Yahweh purposed to do for the world through the chosen nation, He will finally accomplish through His church on earth today. Prophets 17:7, 13, and 14. Because Ezekiel and all the prophets wrote of the coming Messiah and His kingdom, the followers of the Yahshua expected Him to set up the kingdom in their days. However, Sister White clearly tells us it will still come. Carefully ponder her words. The disciples of the Yahshua were looking for the immediate coming of the kingdom of His glory. But in giving them Yahweh's prayer, Yahshua felt that the kingdom was not then to be established. They were to pray for its coming as an event yet future, but this petition was also an assurance to them, while they were not to behold the coming of the kingdom in their day. The fact that the Yahshua bade them pray for it is evidence that in the Yahweh's own time it will surely come. Mount of Blessings 159. A remnant of the Jews have now returned from the lands of the spiritual Babylon and the fulfillment of the prophecy. Get yourself together, gather together, O nation not desired. Zephaniah 2:1. For the Yahweh's command and the spiritual Israel, the church, is, behold, the bridegroom cometh, go ye out to meet him. Matthew 25:6. Yahweh calls for His church, spiritual Israel, the 144,000, to go out of the lands of the spiritual Babylon and stand with the Lamb on the Mount Zion. Declares the Revelator, and I left and lo, a Lamb stood on the Mount Zion, and with Him 144,000 have His Father's name written in their foreheads, Revelation 14:1. Please note that John says the 144,000 are the lineal descendants of the 12 tribes of the Israel. Read Revelation 7:48. They had accepted Joshua as the Messiah, joining the Christian Church, the Antipas Apostolic Church as virgin, Revelation 14:4, Matthew 25:1-13, COL 4:06. They are found in the Yahweh's true church, the house of David, tribe of Judah, the lawgiver, the one teaching the Sabbath and the sanctuary truth, and that's who we are. Brother Johnson taught the Sabbath and the sanctuary truth, but he apostatized from it at the end of his ministry, 2002, when they are sealed as the first fruit, not then contaminated with the spiritual Babylon and her false doctrine. For the first 12,000 sealed are from the tribe of Judah, Revelation 7:5. And we conclude that some are descendants of the early apostolic Jews who lost their Jewish identity and who are not known as Jews but Christians of today. However, some may yet be known as Jews. What is in a name is our next subtitle. Okay. One way to identify Christian Jews today is by their name. Names are significant in the marking work done by a man in linen, Ezekiel 9:3-4. For the name John, Johnson, James, Peter, Peterson, Matthew, Paul, etc., from the lineage of the apostles indicate Hebrew origin. Other names are significant. Rodi means ruler in Hebrew, God, referring to the king of Israel as they lived in one state, would come from the stem of Jesse, the father of King David. See Matthew 1:6, Acts 13:22. Thus the shepherd's rod, believers, who were from the SDA church and a typical Jesse, were providentially called Davidians. Hence the message about the branch Yahshua prophetically followed the SDA and the PSDA messages and the fulfillment of the tithe. In the praying EN is a space half as wide as an E, as an EM, used as a unit of measurement. An EM used as a unit of measure of the printed matter is commonly used as a standard of measurement. Webster's, therefore, by adding 2 ENS together, we have 1 EM, a standard of measurement. Since the name Rodi means ruler, then by taking the EN of the name Rodi or ruler, heaven's representative on earth, and join it with the EN of the great ruler or Rodi in Hebrew and in heaven, the son of the Yahweh, we have an EM on earth, Yahweh's standard of measurement for all printed matter. Also consider that EM is the portion of a line formerly occupied by the letter M. Then a square type used as a unit of measure for the printed matter, Webster. Hence the 144,000 rulers, Rodents in Hebrew, kings and priests, Revelation 5:10, crowns passed to them by Joshua, 1 TG 826, standing in a perfect EM square on the Mount Zion, Revelation 14:1. The two sticks joined as the finished product are seen eye to eye when the Yahweh shall bring again Zion, when the Yahshua the Son shall bring again Zion, which would be Mount Zion, the 12th hour, the house of David, Isaiah 52:8, perfectly united with the great ruler, or Rodin in Hebrew, of the universe is his wife, the branch. She, the Yahweh, our righteousness, Jeremiah 33:15-16. Then the church will be the standard of the measurement for all the nations. In those days shall Judah be saved, and Jerusalem shall dwell safely. Jeremiah 33:16. And the Gentiles shall see thy righteousness, and all kings thy glory, and thou shalt be called by a new name in the last days. See Revelation 3:12. Which the mouth, or the mouthpiece of the Yahweh shall name, Isaiah 62:2. To further consider the name, which means ruler in the Hebrew, Isaiah says, and there shall come forth a rod out of the stem of Jesse, and a branch shall grow out of his roots. Isaiah 11:1. All right. That's the end of that. So it says that for the promise of the kingdom is to the Jews only, but the privilege to be grafted in is unto all. Kingdom illustrated, salvation is of the Jews. Talking about this family tree here, this Jesse, the stem, Isaiah 11. In this illustration, there are three persons brought to you. Jesse, the father of David, the rod David, and the branch Yahshua. For the relationship shows that David, the rod, is not Yahshua, the branch. For the rod sprang from the stem of Jesse, and the branch from the rod. Tract 8, 45 and 46. Said plainly, therefore, the rod coming from the stem of Jesse is symbolical of David, and the branch coming from the rod is symbolical of the son of David, Yahshua. Upon this ensign, branch, and rod, that would be the house of David with Yahshua, sitting upon the throne of David, will make this ensign. The spirit of the Yahweh shall rest, the spirit of the wisdom and understanding, the spirit of counsel and might, the spirit of the knowledge and of the fear of the Yahweh, and shall make them him of the quick understanding, the fear of the Yahweh, and he shall not judge after the sight of his eyes, neither reprove after the hearing of his ears, but with the righteousness shall he judge the poor, and reprove with equity for the meek of the earth. And he shall smite the earth with the rod of his mouth, and with the breath of his lips shall he slay the wicked, and righteousness shall be the girdle of his loins, and faithfulness the girdle of his reign. This brings the end of our steadfast hour contest. This is the 11th hour call, number 11. Click on our audio archive. We're going to close now with the song.